Hi, this is Andrew Phillips. Thank you for downloading the Graymere Church of Christ Sermon Podcast. If you have any questions or if you'd like to contact us, check out our website at graymere.com. We'd also love for you to visit with us in a worship service. You're always welcome at Graymere Church of Christ.
I'll be reading Luke 23:44-49. Luke 23:44-49. I'll be reading from the New King James Version. Now it was about the sixth hour, and there was darkness over all the earth until the ninth hour. Then the sun was darkened, and the veil of the temple was torn in two. And when Jesus had cried out with a loud voice, he said, "Father, into your hands I commit my spirit." Having said this, he breathed his last. So when the centurion saw what had happened, he glorified God, saying, "Certainly this was a righteous man." And the whole crowd who came together to that sight, seeing what had been done, beat their breasts and returned. But all his acquaintances and the women who followed him from Galilee stood at a distance watching these things.
This quarter, we've been looking at Matthew chapter 5 and verse 16 as one of our verses that we're focusing on as we think about serving God with all of our strength. Let's say this together. In the same way, let your light shine before others so that they may see your good works and give glory to your Father who is in heaven. And we remember that as we think about our responsibilities as Christians. And I'm thankful for the songs that have focused us on what we're grateful for. This is a week where we're reflecting on Thanksgiving. And you may remember that as we have our midweek service on Tuesday this week, we're going to be going over some of those blessings. If you haven't stopped by and written down three things that you're grateful for, there's a place at the Welcome Center to do that, and just write that down on a slip of paper and then slide that in the suggestion box there. We're going to be reflecting on that on Tuesday evening. And it's fitting in another way, because as we've been going through this study of the life of Christ in Luke, we're getting to the greatest gift that we could ever be grateful for. We're going to be reflecting on what took place at the cross, the events leading up to it, and the events that follow it. And before we do that, I'd like for us to think about something that two authors, Chip and Dan Heath, write about in a book entitled Made to Stick. They tell the story of a researcher at Stanford University in 1990 named Elizabeth Newman. She earned her PhD specifically by doing a certain experiment. This experiment involved a game that had two players. You would have a tapper and a listener, and the tapper would have the responsibility of tapping out on a table the rhythm of a song. And so you might give a certain song to this person whose responsibility it is to tap it out. Maybe the song Happy Birthday. And they'd sing the song in their minds, and then they'd tap it out on a table. They'd tap out the rhythm. So they would think, "Happy Birthday to you," and they would tap it out without saying the words or giving any indication what the tune was. And the other person, the listener, would have to listen just to the tapping, just to the rhythm, and try to guess what the song was. Now, what made this really interesting is that the listeners were only able to get the song right about 2.5% of the time. In other words, they did this 120 times. Out of 120 times of someone tapping out a rhythm, the listener only guessed the right song three times. Now, what added some interest is before the game was ever played, the person who was tapping out the rhythm predicted that the listener would be able to get the song right one out of every two times. They predicted 50%. The reality was only 2.5%. Now just think about that interaction for just a moment. Why would it be so difficult to try to guess a song based on the rhythm? Why would it seem so difficult for someone tapping out that rhythm? Well, what Chip and Dan Heath point to is the curse of knowledge. That's how they describe it. In other words, if you have that song in your mind and you're tapping it out, you're hearing the tune. You're hearing the melody. You're thinking of how that song goes, but the listener isn't picking up on any of those things. All they are seeing and hearing is a tap on a table. And that can make it very hard. We're familiar with the curse of knowledge. You've probably seen a movie before that had an ending that surprised you the first time you saw it. You couldn't believe that it happened that way. But then when you watched it a second time, you saw all kinds of clues leading up to that ending. And you thought, how could I have been so surprised? I should have seen this coming all along. It's hard to imagine what it was like before we had that knowledge. The reason I bring all that up is because as we look at these passages in the Gospel of Luke and in the other Gospels, we're looking at a story that might be very familiar to many of us. In fact, many of us have probably read these verses before. And it's hard to imagine not knowing what comes next. It's hard to imagine not knowing what the result of this crucifixion is going to be. But if we really want to appreciate what the people who were there with Jesus in the first century were going through, how dark that time was when Jesus was crucified, we've got to imagine what it would be like not to have that knowledge. And so our challenge this morning is going to be to look at the cross from the perspective of those who were experiencing it for that first time. It's not something they'd read about. This is something they're living. They're experiencing it. And they're trying to figure out what is happening. And they don't have the knowledge that we have in hindsight. And so we'll be looking at the cross from that perspective. We're also going to be looking at the cross from a second perspective this morning. Thinking back to that illustration of the tappers and the listeners, it highlights something very important about communication. And that is, if I'm communicating an idea to someone else, it might be easy for me to assume that what's happening in my mind is also happening in that person's mind. In other words, the people tapping out the tune couldn't believe that someone couldn't guess it because they've got the melody in their mind. But it's not in that person's mind. And that has implications for the way we talk to each other, the way we communicate. I can't assume that someone I'm talking to has all the information that I have, has all the knowledge that I have, has the understanding that I have. And did you know there are individuals in our community? Even we might think of being in the Bible Belt as a place where everyone knows the story of Jesus. But if we talk to others and assume that they know what's in Scripture, maybe use terms that we assume they understand, we could be in for a challenge. We could be in for a rude awakening as we see that this is a message that we need to share. And if you're here this morning, and maybe this is one of the first times you've looked at these passages of Scripture, we're so glad you're here. We want to share this with you because this is at the core of what we're all about. But we also want to make sure as we share this message with people we work with, the people that live in our neighborhoods, that we don't make any assumptions. That when we use phrases like salvation or redemption, that we understand the need to explain those things, to explain what that really means. And so as we look at the cross, we're going to be thinking about that as well. How would I really explain this to someone who might be unfamiliar with it, or maybe all they've heard are snippets about what one person said Jesus did and what another person said that Jesus said, and they've never read the Scripture before, or maybe they have and have had trouble understanding it. How would I approach it? With all these things in mind, we come to the cross. We come to this dark, dark hour. It was dark for many reasons. We see that Jesus faced the darkness of deceit. Last week when we left the Gospel of Luke, we had just read the passage of Jesus being in the Garden of Gethsemane, located there in the Mount of Olives, that place that means oil press. And Jesus was hard pressed there as He was praying, as He was wrestling with what was going to happen. And He prayed that prayer, "Not my will, but yours be done." And shortly after that, one of His apostles, Judas, comes. And Judas comes to Gethsemane, not by himself, but he's accompanied by a group of soldiers. Luke tells us that this was Jesus' custom to come to Gethsemane. And so when Judas comes there, he likely knew that's where Jesus would be. And he betrays Him with a kiss, with that covenantal sign of friendship. But it doesn't mean friendship. It's simply an indication on that dark night that this is Jesus. And so he's arrested. He's led through what we usually refer to as a trial. And that's not a bad way to phrase it, but we also need to remember it wasn't a true trial. In fact, it was a mockery of a trial. They didn't even take him to the high priest, Caiaphas, first. They took him to Annas. Now, Annas had served as the high priest, and he was Caiaphas' father-in-law, and so it may be that he still had the influence, but they took him before Annas. Jesus, as he's standing before Annas and being questioned, is struck by one of the guards. Now, remember when this group of soldiers came to Gethsemane, they were prepared to use force, but Jesus didn't fight back. When Peter pulls out his sword, when he strikes off the ear of an individual named Malchus, Jesus heals that. And he doesn't fight with swords. That's not what Jesus is doing. And yet he's struck when he's being questioned. He's then led before the Sanhedrin. They have a hard time finding even two false witnesses that can agree on a story to accuse Jesus. That's how desperately they want Jesus to be accused, and they have a hard time putting that together. He finally admits to being the Messiah. And then they send him before Pilate, the Roman ruler of that area. Pilate doesn't quite understand what's happening. He doesn't see any necessary guilt in Jesus, but he also wants to keep the Jews happy. And so you have this correspondence back and forth as Pilate's trying to decide what to do. And he sends him to Herod, and Herod's waiting for Jesus to perform some sort of miracle. And so Herod sends him back to Pilate. Herod and Pilate become good friends, but nothing else happens as a result of him going to Herod. Finally, Pilate tries to wash his hands of it, allowing the Jews to put Jesus to death by the Roman method of crucifixion. Every step of the way, we read about Jesus coming into people who are thinking primarily of themselves. And Jesus is thinking about others. Judas is thinking of himself, what he could gain. The Jewish rulers are thinking of themselves and the threat that Jesus is to their authority. And Pilate's thinking of himself and trying to stay good with the people that he's ruling over. Jesus faces the darkness of deceit each step of the way. We also read about the darkness of pain that Jesus deals with after this trial. We've mentioned what happened after his arrest when he's brought before Pilate. Pilate even would seek Jesus' release, and yet the Jews would decide they'd rather have Barabbas than Jesus released. One of the things that takes place as we read through the Gospels is we find out that even before the crucifixion, Jesus was flogged. That's a gruesome picture for us to imagine. A few years ago, when The Passion of the Christ came out, there was a lot that was made over the way that flogging was depicted and crucifixion was depicted, and what a harsh treatment that was. Some historians even say, well, maybe that's a little over the top. I don't know, but I do know that it would be hard to imagine anything more painful than what would happen with a flogging and a crucifixion. The historian Eusebius tells us that some didn't even survive the flogging, that could even take an individual's life, as you had that flagellum with those bits of bone and of rock that were embedded in that whip. And so as you would be struck in the back, it would not just strike the skin, it would rip the skin. We can imagine what it would be like to feel that happen, and then to feel a robe placed over your back and then ripped off again. How painful that would be. And so as we think about the crucifixion that takes place, it's not a surprise that if someone had been through a flogging like that very recently and then had to bear a cross on his back, likely the cross beam on his back, that it would be difficult to do. And so verse 26 of Luke chapter 23 tells us that when they led him away, they seized the man, Simon of Cyrene, coming in from the country, and placed on him the cross to carry behind Jesus. Jesus grew up in the family of a carpenter. When we read about him in the Gospels, he's living a very active life and walking long distances. We know that he was an active person. But after the flogging, he couldn't even bear that cross upon which he was going to be crucified. And so when they finally get to the place in verse 33, the place called the Skull, they crucified him and the criminals, one on the right and the other on the left. I don't have to tell you how painful it would be to have nails driven through your body and into a cross. I probably don't have to tell you the difficulty that would occur when the way they were nailed to the cross would make it hard for them to breathe. And in order to breathe, they would have to raise themselves up. And the back that had been torn by the flogging would have scraped the cross. And raising up just to get a breath. I don't have to paint that picture for you. I think we understand the pain that's involved. But I don't want us to forget about that. I also want to realize something else. Luke states it very simply. The other gospel writers do as well. There they crucified him. Now, after everything that we've described, that might seem like an understatement. Why don't you go into detail? Why don't we get a blow-by-blow account of everything that happened? And yet we remember the gospel writers are writing to people who knew about crucifixion, people who understood the process. And secondly, I believe we don't read as much about it because there is a spiritual sacrifice that's being made here. And although the physical pain would it be difficult for us to comprehend, the spiritual sacrifice is that much more important. We have the darkness of pain. And not only do we read about Jesus enduring that pain, we also see the darkness of grief that takes place. The grief that we see in those who are crowding around Him in verse 27 of Luke chapter 23. Following Him was a large crowd of people and of women who were mourning and lamenting Him. Can you imagine what it would be like to be a follower of Jesus and to see what's taking place? Jesus responds by repeating a warning that He's already given them in the book of Luke about a coming day that would be difficult for Jerusalem, the destruction that was coming. And yet, can you imagine looking in the faces of people who were weeping for you? John tells us in his gospel that Mary, Jesus' mother, was there at the cross. We see Jesus making sure she's taken care of, showing John to her and saying, "Behold your son," and John, "Behold your mother." I can't imagine her being there without some tears, can you? Have you ever seen one of your parents cry, one of your parents grieve? Can you imagine what that would have been like? It was a dark hour, as the darkness of grief would have stretched over all those who loved Jesus. And yet, it wasn't just the grief that would have been difficult to understand. There also would have been the shame that was there. You see, dying on the cross was a shameful death that was reserved for criminals and for slaves. It wasn't something that Roman citizens had to endure. And it was something that asserted the power of Rome. It was so cruel that it would be placed in a very public area where people would pass by and see it. And it was a message from the Roman Empire. Look at what we're capable of. Here's why you don't break our laws. The shame of someone who would have been crucified with little to no clothing on in front of so many who would pass by would be hard for us to grasp today, but especially in the first century where honor was so important and shame was so reviled. The kind of shame that Jesus endured, the treatment that He received from the soldiers who mocked Him while they were flogging Him, the ones that mocked Him by offering Him sour wine at the cross, the Jewish rulers that Luke tells us were nearby sneering at Him, challenging Him to come down from the cross to save Himself. Mark's account even tells us that the two criminals on either side of Jesus were hurling insults at Him. And the more we read in Luke, we find out that one of those criminals changes his mind. He changes his tune, and then he begins to ask Jesus to remember him as he comes into His kingdom. I wonder if he saw the way Jesus handled those who were so sneering at Him and were so disrespectful as they were making these statements, who treated Him so poorly. I wonder if that stood out in his mind. Either way, Jesus tells him today, "You'll be with me in paradise." Jesus handled all of these insults that were heaped on Him. I wonder if we wouldn't be surprised if we were transported back to the cross at the laughter that we heard from all of these people mocking Him. The darkness of shame was present, and then the darkness of confusion. Joseph of Arimathea, when Jesus has died, provides a tomb for Jesus to be buried in. Can you imagine what it was like the day after Jesus died? That Sabbath day, as they were reflecting on what had happened. Can you imagine what his family would have thought, his mother, his brothers? What would the apostles have thought? What would those who had been dedicated to his teaching have thought? Here was someone that marched into Jerusalem and they thought maybe he'll be the one to release us from power. But the exact opposite happened. Those who were in power put him to death. Would have been a confusing time. And so as we survey the cross from their perspective, from the perspective of people who don't have our knowledge, it would have been a dark hour. But as we seek to share this message with others, and as others will read these passages, and as we describe the cross to them, and they're seeking to understand it, there's something else that the gospel makes very clear. As dark as this hour was, there is no darkness that can extinguish the light of the world. There is no darkness that can extinguish God's light. John begins his gospel by saying the light shines in the darkness, and the light would continue to shine no matter how dark the world around them might have been. We've talked about all the different ways in which Jesus faced darkness, the darkness of deceit. But we're reminded that Jesus faced injustice so that we won't have to face justice. Jesus endured the injustice of this mockery of a trial so that we won't get what we deserve. There's a verse in the book of Romans where Paul describes the wages of sin. In other words, what sin deserves. And in Romans 6:23, he says, the wages of sin is death. That's what it costs. And because Jesus endured injustice, we don't have to get what we deserve, what our sin costs. In another place, Paul would describe it this way, 2 Corinthians 5 and verse 21. For our sake he made him to be sin who knew no sin, so that in him we might become the righteousness of God. Paul is saying there's someone who did not know sin, but he made him sin so that we might have his righteousness. That's powerful. Jesus endured injustice so that we won't get justice, so that we can have access to God's grace. Not only that, but Jesus endured pain so that one day we would be free from it. I think that's important for us to reflect on as we think of the pain that Jesus endured, that he did that so that we might one day have an eternity free from pain. And I know it's difficult for us to understand when painful things happen in our lives and we struggle with it and we wrestle with it and we lose sleep over it. And there are some questions we'll never have answers to on this side of eternity. But if there's one thing that we can hold on to in times of pain, and maybe you're in a painful time right now, there's one thing we can hold on to. It's that Jesus experienced pain so that we could live an eternity free from it. That there won't be any pain in heaven. That death will be destroyed. That those things don't rule over us, but God does. Jesus endured pain so that we could live one day free from it. Not only that, but Jesus endured that time of grief so that we could grieve as those who have hope. I love the way Paul describes it. In 1 Thessalonians chapter 4 and verse 13, when he says, but we do not want you to be uninformed, brothers, about those who are asleep, so that you may not grieve as others do who have no hope. They're struggling with those who have died. And Paul says, don't be uninformed. Don't grieve as if there is no hope. We have hope as Christians. Paul doesn't say don't grieve. Paul doesn't say don't go through the emotional grieving process. We're human beings. That's what we'll do. Paul just says we don't have to grieve as those who are hopeless because we have a hope. We have that anchor of the soul that gives us a foundation. So we don't have to grieve as those who have no hope. And Jesus endured shame so that we could be exalted. There are several times we read in Scripture about what will happen when we humble ourselves in the presence of God. James 4 and verse 10 tells us that when we humble ourselves in God's presence, then we will be exalted. We don't deserve that kind of exaltation, but it's made possible because of the shame Jesus endured. The shame of the cross was one of the big barriers that they faced when spreading the gospel to the Jews. The Jews were familiar with the old law. They were familiar with what was written in Deuteronomy chapter 21, that those who hung on a tree were cursed. And so the idea that the Messiah sent from God would somehow die this shameful kind of death didn't seem to match with their expectations. But Jesus endured that kind of shame. And he endured that so that we could be exalted. And all the confusion that would take place during this dark time would be turned to clarity when we see Jesus raised from the dead. The statement was made by many, challenging Jesus to save himself. The implication being that Jesus couldn't save himself. Well, we know that they were wrong. If you're looking as far as ability goes, Jesus had the ability to call down legions of angels. He could have changed the situation in a moment. But in another sense, we're reminded that in order to save us, Jesus stayed on the cross. In other words, saving himself and saving us couldn't have happened at the same time. That's what makes this so powerful. Could Jesus have saved himself? He could have. But in order to save us, he stayed. And so it wasn't the fear of the authority of the Roman Empire or the weapons that the soldiers had or the accusations of the Jewish rulers or any kind of other thing that could have been arrayed against him that kept Jesus on the cross. It wasn't even the nails that had driven him into the cross. It was his love for us and his desire to save us. And you and I may have been blessed in our lives with a lot of loving relationships, but there is no greater loving sacrifice than what took place there. It's not that this is a new message. It's not that this is a message we haven't heard before. But it's a message in order for us to truly appreciate, we have to think about what it would have been like to experience it, and we have to reflect on how we will share that with others. How can I share that with someone else who might not have the same information running through their mind that I do? What can I do to build a common ground? How can I explain what we read here? It could be that I could connect with a dark time in that person's life. In a room this large, you may be experiencing a dark time in your own life. If there's anything that the message of the cross teaches us, it's that there is no darkness that can overshadow the light of the world. It can't be extinguished. And as difficult as dark times are for us to understand, just like they would have been if we were sitting around the cross experiencing it for the first time, God was still in control then. He saw His people through then, and He can see us through. I don't know where you are this morning, but it may be that you need to respond to what took place of the cross, to what took place after as Jesus was raised from the dead. And in doing that, maybe you need to come forward and you need to become a Christian. That you need to do something that reenacts that death, burial, and resurrection. That idea of being buried in baptism and raising up to walk a new life. That can happen this morning. And you can be serving a God who will never be overpowered by the forces of death, or shame, or pain, or grief, or deceit, or anything else that can be said against us. Or it may be that this morning you just needed a reminder as to why you serve. Maybe you just needed a reminder of the love of God. The cross tells us very clearly that sin is serious, but it also tells us that God's love is incredible. And you may need the forgiveness that's offered by that loving God. And so maybe there's something that you need to share with brothers and sisters in Christ, and you need prayers. Could be that you just need encouragement. We're going to sing a song in just a moment. That's an opportunity for you to come forward and for you to make the decision to live a life dedicated to Christ. We all have a great deal to think about when we encounter the cross. And if there's any way we can help you, please come as we stand, as we sing together.